listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake Up Hollywood, this is your host of the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this interview. We have a wonderful guest that's making his second return to Wake Up Hollywood, Mr. Greg Leone. Say hello.
Hey, everybody. How you doing tonight or today or this morning or this evening or wherever this may find you?
What are you expecting, company with the empty chair next to you?
Actually, it's funny. Usually the cats joining me or my wife said we have two computers in this room, and it's kind of a study room, and I got probably 150 books on fish and biology and music. And
I love that you're so into fish,
yeah,
dude.
I'm into a lot of things, man.
And I see you have a treasure map behind you on your wall.
Yeah, yeah, it's huge. I don't know how good you can see it, but it's an old, old, old map of the world, and everything's been renamed and stuff. It's pretty cool. My wife and I found it at, I forget where we found it, but we looked at it, and we both go, oh, my God, we got to have that, because otherwise it's just a white wall behind us.
Well, I love it. It's like, you know, I actually love globes and maps, and I don't know why I've always just kind of like loved how they've evolved too. It's like when you see the old maps and what they thought how the world was to where it is now, you know, it's so crazy. It's so nuts. So anyways, dude, you have been an accomplished musician for years. You've been on the show before. Mm-hmm. We're going to touch on some of the stuff we talked about last time, but I'm going to jump right into something very current. You just released a new record, Tell the Children, with your band Greg Leone Invasion.
Yeah.
Tell me what that was like to just kind of like get the band back together. That's right. Look, I got my copy too, and you signed it, bro.
Well, you know, I put the band together. I met the band. I'd almost given up looking because I'd auditioned so many people. And, you know, most guys, they're looking for a reason not to have a job. Most musicians, as I'm sure you found out, it's hard to find guys that are real musicians.
Right.
And anyways, I went down to a jam. A friend of mine was having his, I don't know if it was his 50th or 55th birthday party. And it was right down the street for me. And there was a live jam and they wanted me to come and, you know, play a few songs. So unfortunately they saved me to the very end because the guy, and it was just getting so late. I almost was ready to leave. And he goes,
you
don't leave
right like this.
He goes, if I get you up now, nobody else will get up. So he goes, I have to have you last. So anyways, I get up and we play three or four songs, and this bass player, the whole time, he looks great. And the whole time I'm playing and singing, I'm thinking to myself, man, this guy gets it, man. He is just so supportive. He's not in the way of anything. And, you know, so anyway, so the night was over. It was getting late. My wife and I, we went home. Well, the next day, I guess they went to strike all the equipment and stuff. And the bass player went there and he goes, hey, who was that last guy that got up? And they said, oh, that was Greg Leone. And he goes, has he got a band? And they go, he's looking for a bass player. And the guy goes, man, give me his number. That guy was great. You know, this, that, and the other. So
that's awesome.
We got to get, oh, God. I'm going to turn my phone off.
That's all right.
Okay, good. This
probably E.T., dude.
It never stops. It never stops, the phone calls. But anyways, so that happened. And I had another drummer that I'd played with that I did the Unfinished Business record with. And he wanted to get back doing something again. He'd been after me for, God, I don't know how long. Every month or so, we'd call me, let's put the band back together. And, you know, it's so hard to find a real bass player, you know. And somebody, because I like doing a three-piece thing, and there's only two people up front. You got to have somebody that looks pretty good and moves and, you know, and really plays. And so anyway, so the guy calls me up. We start talking, the bass player. And he lives in Burbank, which is really close to me. So.
Right.
Had him come up. I called that other drummer up, and we went through some of the stuff on my Wishing Well record and some of the stuff on the Unfinished Business, just a couple of tunes I told him guys to learn for the audition. Well, he came up and nailed it. We get to talk, and come to find out, he's first chair cello player in the LA Philharmonic. He's totally schooled, but he loves rock and roll. He loves blues. He loves country. The guy can play everything.
Wow.
And so we were playing with that bass, that drummer, and it was good. But he had some problems with a girl or whatever, and you know, one thing led to another. We're taking weeks off while he gets his stuff together. And I told, and there'd been this other drummer, Ronnie Siago was a world famous drummer. And my best friend kept telling me, you got to get this guy, Greg. This is the best guy you'll ever have. He's played with Richie Blackmore's Rainbow for a minute in a tour. He's played just with everybody. I mean, right. It's just stupid.
Yeah, the musicians are always playing. That's what's.
Yeah. Like. And I told my buddy Mark, I go, Mark, this guy, how am I going to keep him interested? This guy's in demand. He's doing sessions all the time. He goes, he likes what you do, man. Because we had got together, just the two of us jammed one time. And
well, first of all, you're a very accomplished musician. Anybody hears you play, they know you're a badass right away. It's like you just know. So absolutely.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, in your mind, you always think you're great and this, that, and the other. But, you know, you never really know. Because then some guy like Yngwie comes around and like, oh, my God, you know. What am I doing here? You know,
right.
Advancing to crawling right now, you know, but so Ronnie's calling me up every or so. And we were going, anyways, Ronnie comes up and the four of us play. And it was 4 hours later, we walked out of my studio and we're just standing there looking at each other going, oh my God. Oh my God. It was just like amazing. And the both of them looked at each other and they go, we should form a band. And I'm going, guys, I'm so in. If you guys want to do it, let's call it a band. And while we all hugged it out,
feeling, you're like, come on, there's energy, you know?
Yes, and they're super nice guys, you know? They're Christians. There's no nonsense, you know? They're not talking about girls all the time. They're not trying to score drugs.
Right.
It was just good, you know? And I've always said no drugs at rehearsals. Whatever you do in your own time is your own thing, but don't ever come to a rehearsal drunk or stoned or anything like that because we're not going to get anything done. And, you know, and rehearsal time is so precious these days. Because everybody's so busy. So anyway, so we started rehearsing. We got, 15, 20 of my songs that we can cover. And Mississippi Queen, we do a Wicked version of Mississippi Queen and a bunch of other stuff too. We do a bunch of old Grand Funk Railroad stuff that I just grew up listening to and I love.
Yeah.
And these guys love the same stuff and they sing background. So, I mean, it was really magical. So I start booking shows and all of a sudden COVID hit. Everything shut down and I'm floored. I mean, to finally get this killer band together with everybody can do.
You're like, good grief. Give me a freaking break. Good grief,
Charlie Brown. So I, you know, we're all talking, we're just keeping in contact and I go, guys, let's just keep going. I go, I've got my own studio here. Let's just do an album. I've got some new music. You know, let's just get together once a week. I'll teach you a song. The next week, come in and we'll track it. You know, so I had a 16-track tape studio then. I have a 24-tape studio now. I mean,
you recorded a 2-inch?
No, it's 1-inch. I have a 1-inch 24-track machine. It was Tascam's top of the line. And I recorded on a 16-track half-inch is what you got.
Right.
And it sounds great. I mean, it sounds amazing. But this new one.
We recorded on 2-inch and then mixed it to half-inch.
No. I recorded on half inch 16.
No, I'm saying that's what we did. So.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I've never heard. So you recorded on half inch, or you recorded on 1-inch?
I was half inch on the record you have in your hands.
Okay.
Or you should have in your hands.
It's in my hand right here.
Yeah. And so as soon as the record was done, and for like 15 years, I've been looking for a specific tape deck from Tascam, and everyone that I ever found was back in New York, and these things weigh like 200 pounds. You can't ship it or get it or be in pieces. So I just happened to find one on Craigslist, and it was, you know, like 50 miles away. I called the guy. If it's everything you say it is, consider it sold. And it had the remote control. It had the roll-around rack. I mean, it's everything. I mean, it's amazing. And the guy did not realize what they're going for now. They're going for crazy money now. I mean, they're $5,000, $6,000, $10,000 for those. And I didn't want a 2-inch tape machine because I'd had a 2-inch 24-track machine. They're really hard to hook up. You have to have all these special connectors and stuff. It's a pain in the ass. So I ended up flipping it and I sold it after I sat on it for about 5 years. But in the meantime, I'm looking and checking every week. I'm putting in, you know, Tascam, you know, what is it, MS-24 or something like that.
And when you do your records, you don't have an engineer, right?
No, I do it all. I write the songs. I engineer it.
On analog, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's just, it's, you know, it's how I grew up. You know, when I was with Quiet Riot and Dokken, it was all tape. It was all, you know, mic placement and stuff. And that's just how I grew up. And I've done a lot. I told you when we did your session, that was the most professional session that I think I ever got called to.
Thanks, man.
And
thanks.
It was so
coming from you, that says a lot. That says a lot.
Usually I get called in to do these sessions and they tell me, we just want you to do what you do, Greg. Don't even worry about we'll have everything ready. You just play leads, what comes to you, you know? But it's always Pro Tools, and the drums sound phony. The snare doesn't sound like a snare. It sounds like a tom, you know? And it's always kind of loose, but there's something about tape. It captures that nuances. It's the best. And thank God you're there too, because I know you still record the tape too.
I'll always do it. I don't think I'll ever, like, I kind of demo a lot of stuff on Pro Tools and put headphones on, and I'm not bothering anybody, and I'm tracking, like, left to right. But when it comes to making a record, like, what you know, it just sounds better. You know, everything's
better. And this 24-track machine, it sonically is so superior to the one that I had with the 16-track. I can't even believe it. Thick and so fat, and you can just hear the air, like with your thing. That tape, what, now, where you did that, was it the console or the tape machine that, was it Dark Side of the Moon or something?
Yeah. So the tape machine is a Stevens, and they did Pink Floyd did the Wall on it.
Okay.
Steely Dan did Asia on it, and Fleetwood Mac mixed Rumors on it.
That's right.
Tape machine is like it's a little different than most because the tape heads, they actually, they're looser than Studers. So, like, there's so much give on those tape machines, which is why things sound a little bit bigger. Like, there's so many mechanics that come down to how all these tape machines sound better.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so detailed, you know. So it's just like, but you know, when you're recording on it, you're getting these details that you just can't get anywhere else. That's my question first is, so what did you push record and then you walk over?
I don't usually. And my wife got me this beautiful chair that the arms pull up on it. It's they call it a gaming chair. And I've been wanting one for a while, and they were a little bit expensive. And I had two really nice. In fact, it's probably these ones I'm sitting on were in my studio, and they were fine. But the arm, when you're playing guitar, your arms are hitting the armrest, and it's not comfortable. So she found them on sale. I ran down and picked one up, and it's just amazing. But so, yeah, I'll sit at my desk. I'll get all the levels for the drums first. And I've got, I bought so much stuff over the COVID thing. I bought four channels of API preamps. I bought four channels of Neve preamps. Just all top levels. I got 32 tracks, 32 channels of compression, all independent. I mean, and real stuff.
Right.
That's one of each. I'm talking five or six or seven of each, and then a bunch of DBX compressor limiters, and just I made all new wiring for the place. I bought some. I don't know if we're getting too technical on this.
No, I love this stuff. I love. That's okay. There's definitely engineers that listen to this too. So
And I redid my whole studio with Mogami, top of the line Mogamis, and just what a difference! I put all my guitar chords too. I made some, and I could not believe what. It's the best.
They're the best.
And so, and I bought some a pair of U47 microphones. Plus, I got a 251.
You mean a Neumann U47?
No, the Warm Audio.
Oh, okay.
They are exact knockoffs.
I know exactly.
$1,000 a piece, and they are, wow, amazing. So I bought, what else did I get? I got Pultex, two Pultex, and I only use those for the bass drum and the snare, but it allows you to focus those because they're so important, the bass drum and the snare.
Right.
I mean, the snare drum's every other beat, you know, so it's just amazing. And I told the guys, man, we all know this is magical, what we got here. Let's do a record and see what happens. And so either one day, sometimes 2 days a week, and then on the third time, we're pretty much ready to track it. And we'd go in there, and I'd have everything mic'd up, and, you know, I tune all the drum, everything, all the equipment in my studio is mine, and, push record. We put a click track down usually, always, and almost always. And, I have my drummer counted in, and we just go, and usually it's one or two takes. And then after they leave, I'll redo the guitar parts and do some rhythms and double some rhythms or leads or do a good scratch vocal. The bass player.
How many guitar tracks do you think you do?
Usually 4 to 6 per song.
So you do two doubles on the rhythm track?
Exactly.
You track doubles?
I play completely from my soul and my heart when I play.
Right.
You know, Randy Rhoads would double and triple his solos because he played the exact same thing every single time. It was uncanny. I've been in the studio with him. It was uncanny. I mean, I could never do that because it's all about inspiration. I mean, I remember we were working on a song and we did about 10 takes because I just, there was always something, a little thing I did that I didn't like. And the only thing that was the same was how I started out. And the guys in the band were just blown away. They go, how do you come up with all this stuff? I go, you know what? Jeff Beck never does the same solo twice. Eddie Van Halen never does. You know, I just figured when you get to a certain part, it's all about inspiration and where the song takes you. And you shouldn't try to do the same thing every time. How boring would that be?
But you know what? That's a testament to your creativity, too. So in Doug's studio, and every time you play, and I've been watching YouTube videos of you recently, too. Every time you play, there is, I mean, it is fire. You never phone in a solo. No. You never phone in what you're playing, even on the rhythm parts. And like your slide playing is ridiculous. Like I had a local guy who also played slide on the record. And, you know, he heard you play and he was like, damn, that guy is insane. I'm like, isn't he just incredible? Mm-hmm. And you actually taught me a lot too. When you were doing the slide parts on Survive on my record, you were like, let's do this Zeppelin thing where we do this, you know, descending line, pause, and then come back up. And it's my favorite part of the song. Just it's like this dynamic shift that literally like sucks in like a vortex. And then like you're into this new part of the song. And it's just, I mean, that's your sensibility that I think you either have that or you don't. And you have it, dude.
Yeah, it's weird because, you know, I was such a Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah.
And, you know, when it came to solo time with Hendrix, it was never the same. Even if he played two sets a night, the next, you know, like on Band of Gypsies, those solos have nothing to do with each other, but he's just in the moment. And sometimes some of the best stuff in the world comes about that way. And I don't like rehearsing a solo. I like to just see what I can come up with on the spur of the moment. And thank God I've got tape machines. And, you know, I put a Pro Tools type thing in the studio. And I just have two mics up when I come up with a riff or we work. I just push record because it doesn't cost anything. You're not wasting any tape. And if you don't like it, bam, two button. It really is a great tool, but I don't like recording for the record on it because I've got all this stuff. Why would I not use it? You know,
well, it's also what, you know, I think you feel the same way about tape like I do. It's like, you know, when you're with Pro Tools, you have this thing, not you, but he has it. And with tape, you really are going to be inconvenienced if you want to over edit. You know, you got to make
decisions. Yeah.
So it's like if it's not there, that's what I really respect about tape. If the take's not there, you're going to do it again. Whereas if a take's not there on Pro Tools, you're like, well, let's edit the shit out of it until it's there. You know,
we have four bars that are great here. We'll just put those right down. I hate that stuff. Yeah. I hate that stuff.
That's amazing. Yeah. So you started making this record. How did you decide on what songs were going to go in? Did you kind of record a bunch and narrow it down or what?
You know, it's I'm not a hard guy to work with, but I do know what I want. And if somebody doesn't know what they want and I'm telling them what the song needs, then they think I'm hard to work with. But it's not because I've thought of this stuff. I came up with all this music. All the problem areas, I figured everything out. So it makes it a lot easier if a guy is open-minded, you know, and my guys, what do you want, Greg? What do you think it needs here? And they can do it. Whereas before, a lot of bands, I'd have to dumb stuff down. And I hate that. But here you're playing eighth notes when you should be doing a fill in a, you know, so.
Yeah.
And I didn't come up with it, but I bought this, a couple of things from Electro Harmonics that make your guitar sound like a Hammond organ. And
are you talking about the pog?
No, I had one of those. It was terrible. It sounded cool, but it never sounded right in a song. These things, it's the C9 and the B9. You plug your guitar in, but you can't just strum it really hard. You got to learn play to it and kind of finesse it, but it sounds exactly. And I ran it through a Leslie simulator and I could ramp it up and slow it down. So when I did my parts, it sounds just like there's a Hammond organ in the background, and there's other organs on there too. And you can hear it on like Tell the Children and a couple of the other songs, but it just made it a lot easier and a lot quicker than having a keyboard player come up and, you know, plugging in all my keyboards and then finding the sound and stuff. Although with this new record, we might have Brett Tuggle come up from, do you know Brett?
No. Who's that?
Yeah, I met him when I was working with David Lee Roth, and he was a keyboard player in that band towards the end, but he's also been with, you just said it to Fleetwood Mac. and Lindsey Buckingham for like 25, 30 years. He's the other keyboard player. And the guy's amazing. He sings his ass off. I mean, he plays rhythm guitar too. And we kind of hit it off, and he heard the stuff when I was recording, and I had him up, and I brought up some rough mixes, and he goes, dude, I want to be involved in this, but
that's awesome.
It which is great, but then he gets up and he's on tour with Lindsey, you know, when we need him. So it's I ended up just doing him with that thing, and it worked fine. So we just recorded 13 songs. The drummer wanted a drum solo, and it kills me because the drum solo is really good there and it's recorded well. But the next day he did a solo that blew my freaking mind, and I'm just like, why in the hell did that not make it onto it? You know. And I saw some video online. He's written a few books, and he teaches at a university, drums. But he's got, you know, books on how to play drums, and he reads and writes. And so and the guys are funny as hell. I mean, we all have great senses of humor. We it's just fun. This band is just so fun, and I'm just hoping we can get some. You know, we had a record deal with Sony, but the guy that got it for us, once he secured the deal, it was a worldwide release. He hands me contracts. This should have been done way before that, but he wanted 50% of everything right off the top, stuff he had nothing to do with. And I'm like, no, I can't do that. So I had my lawyer get in touch with him.
One thing that I respect is you've gone through the ringer when it comes to some of this stuff, just like dealing with and seeing how the industry is, you know, it's kind of ridiculous. It's so stupid. And it's stupid. And it's like, the weird thing is, like, you know, the musicians aren't unionized, and it's just like the wild, wild west. And like, there's no sense of order. And the people that do have the control and order are screwing over bands and artists left and right. And it's just a weird game. Tell me how, like, you know, we'll get more into the record, but you know, you had this opportunity, but you've been going through these kind of situations for years.
Well, I knew I'd never see any money with him taking 50% off the top. And, you know, I want to take care of my guys. I might have written the music, but they're playing with me, and I can't do it without them. So I'm letting everything equally split 13% or 12%. And then we got to pay, you know, luckily I own all the equipment and stuff, so we don't have to buy any equipment.
Right.
But yeah,
you own the record. That's the biggest thing. Nobody was paying for you guys to be in a studio to do it. You guys did it yourself. So, you know, it's just about finding the right distribution and finding the right avenues. One of the cool things you did in Tell the Children the Record was before the last song, you had this really cool segue, kind of like an instrumental floaty section getting into that song. Tell me, like, what was your concept? What was an obstacle recording?
I was doing a session with a producer named Beachy, and I came up with, we were just getting levels, and I don't consider myself an acoustic guitar player, but we were doing some tracks for him for some movie or something. And he was just getting some levels, and I just started playing this. It was beautiful. And I took that tape because I made it up on the spot, and then I brought it into my guys, and I was just going to have it as like a 1 minute little part between songs. But the drummer, the bass player, you know, he with the cello and stuff, he goes, Greg, because it starts up and it ends on a major chord.
Right.
And Tell the Children, we tune down a half step and it's in a minor. So we end on that sustaining, you know, D proper. And then it goes down to a D flat minor or a C sharp minor. And not a C sharp minor. Anyways, we tune down a half step. So it would be a D flat minor. And but he took that and he did like four or five tracks at different positions on the neck, and slid it down until it turned into a half step down, plus it turned into a minor. And it's so eerie sounding, and it's so beautiful the way it sets up Tell the Children. And it's just genius. I love it.
It has an airiness to it's very like Pink Floyd-ish. That's what I was kind of feeling. Yeah.
You know, I wrote that song so long ago, and I've recorded it a few times, and they didn't have that thing, you know, like Sabbath has a certain feel and a certain way the drummer lays back in the beat, and the other drummers just didn't get what I was trying to do. Even though some of the recordings were good, they just didn't have that thing that I wanted to release it and that be the final thing of it where everybody knows the song. So, you know, my guys now, you know, my drummer studied under Carmine Appice when he started out in New York for, wow, I don't know, 5 or 6, 7 years. And he still hangs out and knows these guys. So he's of that kind of mindset where there's no rush in this stuff. Right. In fact, he was, of all things, he's Bill Ward's in the Bill Ward solo band. He was the drummer for like 15 years with Bill Ward. So he gets that laying back business. And guys from New York, man, drummers from New York, they're a lot tougher than guys from out here.
Yeah. And that record, Beck Bogert, you know, is one of my favorite records.
Yeah, me too. That's the best Beck ever, in my opinion. The songs are great. You know, I did a lot of sessions with Tim Bogart. There was a guy, he just died, but plus the producer, Dito Godwin, just died. And Dito used to call me in, and it was me, Tim Bogart, and a guy named Kevin Valentine, a great drummer too. And we would be, you know, for people that wanted to come in, they had a song and they were singers or whatever, we would come in and lay down the tracks. But man, Tim Bogart, man, what a bass player.
Total badass. I'm going to flip it up a little bit. Let's play Tell the Children First, the feature of the record. And yeah, I want people to kind of get an idea.
Yeah.
The last song of the record, but it's a cool track.
Yeah, this is the heaviest song on the record. It's the longest song on the record. I love the lyrics. You know, preachy, but it says, Jesus saves you when Satan enslaves you. Don't make a foolish mistake. Believe in the word and your prayers will be heard. Tell the children today. And it's just a little thing at the end, but you got to do the right things in life. You know, I never preach to you. I never tell anybody how to run their lives or do it. If somebody's like really messing up, I just don't hang out with them. You know, if you try to talk to them and they don't get it, I got to move on. I don't have time to waste, you know. Right. And you don't, we don't. Life is, you know, I've wasted so much time with people that we're never going to go anywhere thinking I can help them, and you can't.
Yeah, so you can't put people back together, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. So let's listen to Tell the Children, and then we'll take some calls from, no, I'm kidding. We'll,
I just gave you the host hat.
I know.
Well, here's Greg Leon Invasion with Tell the Children.
Lock the doors, don't you?
Still killing, man. Was that?
Dude, what is going on? It was dropping out like crazy. It sounded terrible. The mix is...
Don't worry. It's just...
I have to worry. I'm going crazy. You're thinking, this sucks.
You're like, this is the final master. No, I mean, you know, that's the shitty thing about streaming is sometimes the audio does that, but we can fix it in post and put the songs in. So don't worry.
But please don't let people hear it like that. Does not sound like the record at all.
No, you know, what's cool is when you download, like what a lot of people do, they'll download the video and then they'll actually put the songs in, you know, like underneath in iMovie. So it's not playing that. So when you post it, it'll be easy to do. So don't worry. Don't worry, Greg.
I have to, because if anybody hears that, they're going to go, what the hell is he trying to say? I mean,
whenever anybody plays something over a podcast, it's just like, that's how it is. Unfortunately, the technology hasn't advanced to where it sounds Z or Theremin, or was it a Moog, or what was that?
Theremin and...
I nailed it. That's the first time I've nailed it. Is that a Theremin? And the answer is yes.
You had me a Theremin. Yeah, it was a Theremin. Man, I'm still spooked because if that goes out sounding like that, I'm done. I mean, it sounded so bad on my end. I'm serious. It sounded horrible.
Don't worry. Dude.
The levels, and it was like dropping out and just, oh my God.
You know what's so funny? It's like every musician that's on the show, they have these freak out moments because they're like, what's going on? But you know what? It's also where it's cutting out for you, it's not cutting out for me. Where it's cutting out for me, it's not cutting out for you. So it's just like how, you know, when you hear it, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. So you did this, like, you know, it's kind of like a Stairway to Heaven meets Survivor kind of vibe. How did you come up with this concept to kind of make it so kind of dark and have this, like,
I just wanted, you know, I wrote the song years ago, like I said, and I just wanted something really heavy. I'm a big Sabbath fan. I'm a big Dio fan. I love Rainbow. And, you know, just that old Rainbow with Dio in it was just so magical. And it just took you somewhere when you listen to it. And it still does when I listen to it. I'm a huge Frank Marino fan. I love him. And I just, and it, man, I swear, I hope that when this actually goes out that it doesn't sound like what I just heard, because that is not the mix.
No, don't worry. Don't worry. Don't get pennies in a lot.
Don't worry, Lucy.
No, I mean, honestly, it's so funny because it's like, you know, and this is what I find. Let's talk. This is a perfect segue into this. This is what I find so odd.
You wonder why I drink. Come on. No.
Well, no, I mean, it's honestly, it's like you honestly gave me the phrase, this is why musicians die young. Which I use all the time, man. But you know, when people stream music like on Spotify or all these, like, you know, streaming services, they're getting such a shitty version of the songs and the music, and it just blows my mind. But you know what's so crazy is, like, I can get any song anytime I want at the touch of my hand, and I think that is incredible. But they have to work on how things sound, because they need to sound like speakers that I have in the back. You know what I mean? You know, it's just crazy. So yeah, I mean, don't worry. It'll all work out. Don't worry, Greg.
I hope so.
So, you know, this first song that we're going to play next, man, when I listened to it right away, and I think I told you this, man, it just sounds so like Def Leppard. One of my favorite rock bands is Def Leppard. And you had such a cool vibe, and you're like, man, I don't even know where that comes from, because I'm not even influenced by them, but it definitely has a cool Def Leppard vibe. How did you kind of like come up with that intro and some of that guitar sound?
There's a song by Y&T, who I'm a big fan of, Dave Menichetti and Y&T, along with my wife, and she's just, you know, she just got turned on him, and she's crazy about him. But there's a song called Summertime Girls, and I didn't want to steal the riff, but I wanted that up feeling that they had. So, and I know I've heard from a couple of people, it sounds like the beginning of, is it Photograph?
Which is my favorite song by them, by the way.
Okay.
So I was this is so awesome. I mean, you got me right there, you know?
Yeah, I had that riff, and I had about five or six other riffs that I didn't know what to do. And so we needed a song for the record, another song. And I just, all of a sudden, I figured a way to put them all together. And that's what happened. And my wife, she goes, sing about something that really happened, you know? or sing about the truth, because I like to make up stories and, you know, kind of fantasy stuff like Dio did. And this, you're talking about She Wants Me, right?
Yeah.
And there was a situation many years ago when I was like 19. I met a girl that was like a really famous singer in a band, and it was an all-girl band. And I ran into her in North Hollywood at a place called the Sugar Shack. And she invited me over to her place. And when we're going into her apartment, she's taking her clothes off. Wow. And she's getting, I mean, it was like, there was no, I mean, she just wanted to get right in there and do it. And I, you know, I wasn't no saint or at the time, but I, you know, I had a girl through high school girlfriend, and, you know, we had done it quite a few times a day. No, we did it quite a few times. You know,
but, all of a sudden this interview got all X-rated. I love it.
You know, and so we get there, and I'm, my dad, in my back of my mind, my dad's going, man, any girl that's that fast jumping, that she's been with a guy last night, the night before. And, you know, he had some stories about the service where guys that he knew, you know, ended up getting diseases and stuff. And, right. You know, and so I'm thinking the whole time what my dad's telling me, and I could hear it in my head. And I go, I just thought to myself, you know, this ain't worth it. I don't care who she is. It ain't worth it. And so I ended up not doing it and getting out of there. And I was telling my wife the story. She goes, you should write it about that. You should write. That's hilarious. You know, so that's where that's I awesome. Came. And I think my wife helped me with the lyrics on that, too. And just to get it to the point where it was, you know, it was a real song. So that's what this is. And I pray to God when I listen to it, it doesn't sound like the last one.
No, don't worry. Dude, we all know you're a badass, so don't worry. And just the fact you're on here and I'm interviewing you twice, that should say how much respect
I got. I got a 20-foot length of rope in the back of my car, and if this doesn't sound good, I'm going out to that tree at the end of my property. Cool.
How'd you just get people to be more curious to buy the seed, man? That's how that. Yeah, and right. Let's play it from the top. Here She Wants Me.
I said, baby, why you messing with a man like me?
Awesome, awesome. Sam said to tell Greg to listen to the audio afterwards because he's doing it through an outboard separately, so don't worry.
Okay, yeah, it sounds like you're running it through a phase shifter and it's overloaded and it's just spinning around and like, ah!
You're like, why does my record set? No, man, don't worry. Don't worry. It'll all be
good. I'm thinking, why does Nikki not like me? Why is he doing this to me?
I'm like, I'm trying to keep you down. You're trying to do what the label of your brilliance. No, no, honestly, you know, the cool thing, and the truth is, you can hear your brilliance through all of that because
you're please don't let me go out like that.
I won't. Don't worry. You're playing these cool arpeggios and you just have these really good riffs. I love that you're such a riff-based songwriter because
you know what? That's
everything.
You know what? It's all about the riff with rock and roll, man. I mean, you listen to all of the great songs from the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and even up into the mid-80s, there was a riff that hooked you in, and that was a hook. And it just hooked you in, and you couldn't get enough of it. So I hate a lot of the music these days because there's no hooks. There's no riff. Yep. They're playing cowboy chords and whining about how bad their life is. Oh, you poor little thing. You need a hug. Let me hug it out. You know, it's just stupid. And they're just whining about stuff. Man, music and rock is supposed to fund and review. It's supposed to charge you up, and so that's
not to interrupt you. Sorry, you finished what you were just saying. You said that's why I.
Well, that's why I write the music like I do. When I want high energy stuff, I want stuff that charges people up and brings them up, not brings them down. I don't want people thinking about how bad their lives are.
Right.
You know, or oh, poor me. You know, who wants that? I don't want it.
Right.
You know, stuff comes on like that. I turn it off. And like even Saturday Night Live, they used to have great bands on there every night. We looked forward to it. Now it's just a bunch of whiny people. And it's all a big production that takes away from the fact that there's no song.
Yep.
You know, isn't where the hell's
crazy? You know, I used to feel the exact same about Saturday Night Live. Like it was such it was such a joy not only to see the comedic sketches, but to see the musical acts. And it's like now, I mean, I don't even, I tape them all in the hope that so much, maybe one out of every 12, you know,
that's exactly like us.
And it's neither funny or musically creative. Yeah.
And they got so political that you can't even watch it. It just turns people off. You know, I don't want politics in my music.
Yeah.
You know, that's just stupid. You're going to alienate half of your audience right there.
Well, you know? in our last interview with you, you know, and this is a really special thing because not many people can say this, but you said you were playing a gig in Pasadena. This was, you know, many decades ago, and you were ripping it up. And you said there were two guys kind of standing there, and they were watching you play, and you were just playing and playing, and you've been like this local legend forever. And after the gig, they came up to you, and one of the guys was...
That was in Glendale, and I was playing. It was at the Chevy Chase Country Club, and this friend of mine in high school, Martin Oliver, was having this party, and it was in the rec room or whatever you call it. But there was like 200-300 people there, and we're playing, and I see at the door standing there these two guys, and you know I knew everybody in my high school, and then you know the other surrounding high schools were all following me too. So I see these two guys. I go, man, I never saw them. Who are those? And I go, those guys are. There's somebody, they're in a band or there's something, because they didn't look like your average guys that were at the party, you know, with Levi's and, you know, flannel shirts on and stuff. These guys, you know, they look like stars. So anyways, they walk over while I'm playing and I'm doing my Frank Marino and Hendrix stuff and Trower, and I'm doing dive bombs and stuff. And I got a 63 Fender Jaguar guitar, and they walk over to me when I take a little break, and the guy, they're talking to me and they go, hey man, how do you get that guitar to go so low with the dive bombs? And I told him how I took the spring out and stretched it way out so the tremolo arm was up and I could bend it down and do the dive bombs. And it'll come right back in perfect tune. And, you know, I was using, a Maxon power booster thing. And I had a Fender, I think a Basement at the time, and a couple of Marshall bottoms and, you know, one of those Univox space echo, a Univox tape echo, the little one you plugged it in the back. They were terrible, but they did a thing that was great, but they were terrible. So anyways, and it was all, you know, this stuff like that. So, you know, that was that. They wanted to talk, they thought it was really good, and they were really enjoying it, and it was fun. They hadn't seen me play before, but they'd heard about me. Well, a year later or so, I go to Glendale College, and there's a concert with Quiet Riot, and this is what you're talking about, right?
Yep.
Yeah. There's a concert there in the auditorium with Quiet Riot and Van Halen. Well, Quiet Riot comes on, and, you know, I went backstage, and I met Randy and met the guys there. It's really fun. Well, I go back to see Eddie, and I see Dave. I go, oh, my God, that was those guys. That was those two guys that came to the show and had no idea who they were, you know. And I never saw them play live until then. And then I saw them again before they had their deal at the Whiskey a couple of times. Wow. And, yeah, that was something, man. You know,
an era of rock and roll. And, you know, the funny thing is, I was talking to another guitarist, and they were asking me what's the best, like, guitar solo I've ever seen. And I actually said it was Eddie Van Halen at the Hollywood Bowl. He came out.
I'm hanging up on you.
Well, of course, it's you, Greg. But no. He came out and played by himself, and he did this, like, insane guitar solo.
Oh, it's incredible.
It was just like this unbelievable. What is that? What?
This is a brand new book, another book that just came out called Axeman. It has 10 hard. And they did a what do you call it on me? It's by a guy named James Curl, and he's done three or four. I'm chapter two.
That's awesome.
I don't know if you can see that.
Yeah, I can see it.
But there's a bunch of people in here. Rowan Robertson, me, Gus G, Tracy G, Jennifer Batten, Steve Lynch, Joey Tafola, Oz Fox, Jeff Duncan, and Joel Hoekstra. It's a really good
book. All legends, man. All legends.
And he had interviewed me a while back. And have a seat. My wife just walked in. She just got home from work. And
hello. I'm Nikki, by the way.
This is my wife, Susa.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well.
Lights are horrible in this room.
Yeah, that's terrible.
It's very blurry. But and it adds about 50 pounds to my... Yeah, that's good. Put me in the dark. I had it. We're working on Sousa's new record now.
Comedy show right here.
We got... it's a family hour. And
yeah.
We got... We did two records with Sousa already. And we just started a third one. I think we went three songs into a new record.
Yeah.
So we've been busy, you know, just trying that's to... Awesome. Yeah, I mean, because you figure, you know, if you don't get this stuff out there and you get older, you got to leave something behind. You know,
it's so funny you say that because I've had more of that feeling in the last like 5 years. I mean, I don't think I thought about that when I was first making songs and records, and I just never really thought about leaving something behind. But it's like as you get older, there's something that makes you realize what was the purpose of my life experience. And like when it comes to music and musicians and singers and songwriters, it's like you're leaving these jewels behind and for the world to explore. And they may be discovered. They may, you know, not be for 50 years, 100 years. But all that matters is like you're following your dharma and you're doing it and you're being true to yourself because that is what the purpose is. Yeah. You know?
For me, what got me wanting to get this stuff out there was the death threats. No, I'm kidding.
Well, I think sometimes it could be about the journey, you know, it could be about if you're really, if you're driven to do something, there must be a reason.
Right.
Why? And maybe it's really about the journey along the way there, or maybe it's about getting there, but who knows? But in many forms of art, people aren't even recognized during their lifetime, you know, so but it can't be about just kind of, all the fringe benefits of being recognized. It has to be about, you know, doing what you really want to do.
The thing is, it's I think most artists aren't recognized. And the ones that usually how it works, I mean, the ones that are very celebrated in their lifetimes, in 200, 300 years, they're not. You know, like, for example, I'll give you, this is a great example I learned in music school. So Johann Sebastian Bach was like very well known when he came out. And then his son, C.P.E. Bach, which was Carl Philipp Emanuel, he became more famous in his lifetime because everybody thought he was better than his dad. And everybody thought he was the greatest composer of his time. So he was very celebrated like a rock star. And then it took 50, maybe 100 years for people to realize that he was just regurgitating the very concepts and beautiful melodies that his dad was doing. So,
right.
And it sometimes it just takes a lifespan. So,
you know,
I think when it comes to music, it's there's a purpose that we find in just the creative, you know, just to be creative and tap into that spirit, because there's something that we tap to that we can't.
That's what I always believe. Yeah. It's like it all belongs to God. He just allows us to tap into some of it. You know?
Yeah. It's like closest we can get to it is I think through music. Yeah. So in honoring, like taking, you know, those moments and putting it into a song or an album, it's like, Your life is recognized as being completely true to yourself. So that I love that you said that, Greg, because it is about just leaving something behind and leaving albums for people to kind of understand and discover, and all the work you put into, you know?
Yeah. Talking about leaving something behind, how's your dog Otto doing? Otis.
Dude.
Otis. And you pick up after him, right? You don't want to leave nothing behind, right?
He's the best, dude. He
is a cool
dog. Honestly, whenever I look at him and I tell him I'm going to rehearsal or I'm going to the studio or doing something, he gives me this long bulldog face like, why would you leave me? And I'm like, why would I leave you? You're the best ever. So he's the reason that I don't tour for long term, because I just would miss him like crazy. He's the best.
Oh, yeah. You know? We got a Maine Coon cat that's 30 pounds or something, and we are just crazy about that damn cat.
His name's Rockstar, and he lives up to the name.
He gets photographed from all of my customers. They take photos with him. It's crazy. I never seen nothing like it.
Yeah. And he just stares at all your fish, and he's like, one day they're going to let me have one of these.
It'll all be mine.
Let's play another track. What do you want to play? Track two, track three?
Let's do Rainbow Girl. That's actually about my wife, Sousa.
Okay.
She grew up in a hunting and fishing lodge in Prince Canada. Rupert in BC.
British Columbia, Canada.
I remember.
And every time we go there, you know, her place was like 15, 20 miles away from anything. But they would go into where we lived at, and they would call her the Rainbow Girl. I get all these idiots that think I'm talking about girls at the Rainbow Club in Hollywood.
You're like, no, it's not it.
No. So I wrote this song about that. And when I first met Sousa, I was playing at the
House of Blues.
House of Blues in Hollywood. And it was Randy Rhoads' birthday that we did, and there was about 800 people there. And I had been talking to her on the phone for a while, but I hadn't really met her. And I had this totally different picture in my mind of what she looked like. And so at the end of it, I mean, when we're on the phone, I said, I'll put you on the list. And when we're done, just come backstage and introduce yourself. So she shows up at the door after the thing. She says, tall blonde girl. And really built, and she's in this beautiful sweater, and she just was like, wow, just amazing and cool. And we ended up talking, and the next day we talked, and when she asked me out on, it wasn't a date, she goes, this isn't a date. She just, you know, she made that real clear. But later that night, I couldn't keep myself from it. I gave her a kiss, and we've been together 22 years now.
That's very amazing. That is an amazing story. Yeah. Love is everything, man. So
absolutely.
It's awesome. Well,
this is
for me at the right time, Sousa.
So this is my song to my wife, and it's called Rainbow Girl.
Here's Rainbow Girl with Greg Leon Invasion.
Trying to leave a
Man, what a good guitar solo. That was crazy. That was great. Oh,
thanks. It was fun. Man, it's hard to listen to with it so garbled up like that.
It's all right. We'll hear it better on the stream video. Don't worry. Greg, we're running out of time, but you know, where can people find you? Where can people find you? I could talk to you for hours about music.
And we'll have to do another one because it's always fun.
We're going to do another one. Yeah, you are one person I'm going to always have back on the show because you and I just get along, first of all.
Yeah.
And it's like, I love talking music with you because you're so well versed in guitar and riffs and style, and you have this where can people find you and your band? And you know, you and I were supposed to be doing a show, unfortunately. Yeah. We've been having terrible tendonitis, so we'll have to do one on another time, but
we'll do another one.
Where can people find you online? Or where can people find you? Period?
People can find me online at gregleoninvasion.com. I'm on Facebook, Greg Leon. You know, I'm easy to get a hold of. And the records are available, all of them, all four records are available on my website, gregleoninvasion.com. And my wife's records are Sousa.
Yes.
How do people get in touch with your records?
Oh, SousaWorld.com.
SousaWorld.com.
Yeah.
Awesome. Good. That's a good website. That's awesome.
Yes. Yeah.
You're lucky you got that one.
Yeah, sexy pictures of her on there too, guys. don't get any crazy ideas. This lighting in here is terrible. It's just blurry as hell.
All good. That is amazing. And you know what? You know, a lot of people, you know, may know or don't know, you've been fixing my amps for 20 years. It's been so long.
Has it been that long?
Yeah, and you know what? It's like, that's initially how we met. And it's like, you're such a badass at everything that you do, and I just respect you and just have nothing but love for you. And,
thank you, man.
Always want to connect with you and always want to make music with you. And I'm bringing you into Aspen Pittman's studio, who is one of your best friends, you were telling me.
Yeah.
We're going to do some music with the recordings we did with Pat O'Brien, and we're going to do some cool stuff. So that's coming up soon. And I just wish you nothing but the best. And thank you for being
a guest. You know, if you ever get into a situation where you really don't know what to do and you're in a quandary and it's just like driving you crazy, just ask yourself and be serious when you ask yourself this, what would Greg do?
I'm about to get it tattooed on my arm, dude. Just be like, what would Greg do? I'd probably go buy a lot of fish, that's for sure.
Yeah, don't get into fish. There's no money in that anymore. That those days were over. Don't do that.
I will take your word for it. Well, on behalf of Sousa, Greg, thank you again for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. And Sam, we'll see you guys next week. Thanks for tuning in. And we wish you nothing but the best. All right. Peace, love, and rock and roll.
Woohoo! Right on, man.
Listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.